You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Yes, Andrew Little joined me again this week to discuss changes to the Crimes Act, double bunking, and the expungement of convictions for historical homosexual offences. I began by asking Andrew whether he will allow the double bunking at Arahata to go ahead.
It is just running out of space. The alternatives are that we can put people into police cells that are only really designed to have people there for one or two nights. We can try other places. It does tell us that we have a very urgent and immediate problem, notwithstanding this government's longer-term plan to reduce the prison population by 30%. So it tells you just the balls that we're having to juggle as we make these decisions at the moment.
So the double bunking will go ahead?
We have to have a place to put prisoners. If the courts say this person's going to be placed in custody, then we have to have a place for them. Likewise, if the police arrest somebody and they can't be released until they've been before a judge, we have to have a place to put them. You can be sure that the system, the prison system, will do their very best to make sure that prisoners are accommodated in a humane and dignified sort of way, but I cannot say anything other than the prison system is under immense pressure and we have a major problem on our hands.
Because the Ombudsman also has said that the cell sizes at the prison don't meet international standards for one person, let alone two. I mean, how much of a problem is this?
Look, these are major problems for us, which is why we've actually got to make some decisions. We've allowed the prison population to grow like Topsy, and no decisions up until now have been taken to make room for more accommodation or to review exactly what it is that we're doing that's causing so many people to wind up in the prison system. This is the challenge that we've got, and we've got these international obligations also that we have to meet for our prison population. There is a crisis in our prison system, and the government is doing the best it can to deal with the situation we've got.
It's not really an anomaly, because many of our prisons are in bad condition. Do you have any plans to upgrade prisons?
Well, this is part of the series of decisions we are yet to take, which is about, what do we do with our prison system, bearing in mind the very acute short-term pressures and our long-term goal of reducing the prison population through a more effective criminal justice system. So, and there are prisons we've got at the moment that are kind of past the use-by date that are, I would say, barely fit for purpose. And so all of these things come together in the series of decisions that we have to make.
And corrections has said they're struggling to cope with the increase in women prisoners in recent years. What do you blame this increase on?
Look, there are a number of drivers for the increase in women prisoners. We know that it's women prisoners or women who offend typically do so either in their view for their family or under pressure from others. We know that a lot of their crimes are what we might call economic crimes. They are crimes of hardship, and they're trying to, make sure that they and their families can survive. I think drug offending has a lot to do with it in terms of as a cause of offending. And so all of these factors are ones that we have to address if we're trying to reduce offending rates.
So you wouldn't put it down to any specific government policy that has been introduced in the last few years?
I'm not familiar with any analysis that says that. I think the research that I've seen suggests that, as I say, women, a lot of the offending by women in more recent years tends to be driven by either economic factors or by family and community factors that have driven those women to offend.
And Peter Gluckman, the Prime Minister's Chief Science Advisor, has said today that building new prisons isn't the answer. What else can the government do?
I think the point he's making is that continuing the policy settings that we've had for the last 20 or 30 years of more and more people winding up in prison for longer and longer periods of time isn't actually achieving the purpose of, reducing offending and making communities safer. And I don't disagree with them. You look at the information and it tells you that actually there is something seriously wrong with the way we're managing offending and criminal justice issues.
The condition of it has meant that as the minimum security prisoners, they're being treated more like maximum security prisoners, having less time outside of the cell and little access to education programs. Will you be addressing this?
yeah, all those things come into it. I think there is a question about the approach we take to managing prisoners who are in prison, and whether what we're doing there is addressing some of the causes of offending, whether we are getting them ready at the time of release to go back into the community, capable of surviving in the community. And I'm not sure we're doing enough in that regard.
Because would you agree that poor cells do impact rehabilitation?
Of course they do, and I've been into prisons, and you see the conditions there, and you ask yourself, how on earth is this contributing to somebody, you know, getting better, feeling better, and prepared to go back out into the community and be a productive citizen? I think some of our prisons are actually having the reverse effect.
And the Crimes Amendment Bill, that passed its first reading, I believe, the other day.
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, and the spousal protection changes. Can you talk about these?
Yeah, so at the moment, the law says that if you're a spouse and you assist your spouse who has offended to either escape detection or escape custody, then you cannot be prosecuted. There's a spousal immunity. It's outdated. It actually is discriminatory because you have to be either married or in a civil union partnership. If you're a de facto, then you know you don't get the protection. So we just think it's an anomaly, and it's time to go, and the bill will remove it.
And there's also been changes to the blasphemous libel law that's been repealed. It hasn't been used since 1922. Why has it remained in the Crimes Act for so long?
Well, that's a good question. I think the three sort of crimes that are in this Crimes Amendment Bill have been on the statute books, and there have been successive recommendations that they should go, but nobody's ever done anything about it. They're pretty non-controversial, and that's why I said, listen, let's just start the cleanup. There was a bigger rewrite of our Crimes Act yet to happen. That's going to be another, you know, year or more away yet. But there's stuff we know that just simply doesn't need to be there. We can do the tidy up, start the tidy up now, which is what we're doing. Blasphemous libel. The last prosecution was 1922, and it was unsuccessful. So let's just move on.
Talking about this more thorough review of the Crimes Act, what sort of things are you expecting to look at in this?
Oh, look, that work is well underway. I think it's a piece of legislation that goes back to 1961. Of course, it's had amendments and partial rewrites since then, but I think it's about making it coherent and making it relevant to the 21st century. You know, with your basic criminal code, which is what the Crimes Act is, you've got to clearly lay out the offences. It's got to be making sure that they reflect social values today about what, you know, is offensive to the community, and about making sure that innocent citizens are protected against those who would offend against them, and having a Crimes Act that reflects that.
Would this be the first sort of thorough review of the Act since it was implemented way back in the 60s?
In 1961, yes, it would be, yes.
And finally, the Criminal Records Expungement of Convictions for Historical Homosexual Offences Bill passed its second reading. Do you want to talk about this a bit?
Yeah, it passed its second reading, and indeed it's what they call the committee stage of Parliament. It's now just got its third reading to go, which I expect will happen next week. So this is for those who were convicted of homosexual crimes, as they were, pre-1986. So before we passed the Homosexual Law Reform Act, this is an opportunity to get those convictions expunged from the record, so that those who are carrying the stigma and the shame of a conviction for doing nothing other than loving the person that they love, they can get that removed, and it's the right thing to do. So we've set up a process to enable that to happen. We think it's roughly about 1,000 people are directly affected, plus for those who are deceased but have convictions on their record, family members will be able to apply for an expungement as well.
Will this include any compensation?
No. I mean, that came up in the submissions from people. In the end, we just thought the circumstances in relation to each person and how they were arrested, what happened, the level of kind of hurt and humiliation about all that, it's too complex and complicated to assess compensation in each case. And so we've left that. And actually, for most people, what they said was most important is to get rid of the conviction off their record, and that's what this legislation will do.
Will this include an apology from the government?
Yes. The previous Minister of Justice, Amy Adams, who introduced the bill, she's done absolutely the right thing in doing that, she She made an apology in Parliament at the first reading of the bill. In the third reading, I will reiterate that apology and make it clear that, you know, people should not have been treated in that way. We enjoy a more enlightened age right now, and we want to make sure that people understand that the old-fashioned, outdated mores of the past do not apply anymore.
That was Labour MP Andrew Little. The Wire. That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.